It's a pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity. The OpenNet Initiative is a collaboration of four institutions. So I work at the Berkman Center at Harvard University. We work along with the universities of Toronto, Oxford, and Cambridge.
Mm-hmm.
And our bread and butter, our core mission, is to identify and document internet censorship around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we have a niche in the world is that a lot of the decisions are being carried out behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very often difficult to understand when websites are being censored or not.
Mm-hmm.
And as well, no one else is carrying out the comprehensive work of comparing censorship across countries around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're doing right now.
So it's a research that tried to identify those things, those initiatives coming in from the government in terms of surveillance and filtering different websites.
That's right. Primarily filtering.
Okay.
Primarily filtering. We're starting to look at surveillance. The problem with surveillance being is it's very hard to identify it.
Exactly.
When it's done well,
okay,
you don't know about it. One of the tricky things about filtering is,
uh-huh,
if you're very transparent about filtering,
okay,
then it diminishes the effectiveness of filtering.
Do you receive the sort of request from the people who are working on the ground, what to do with next and in their advocacy and awareness raising type of thing?
Well, I think generally the advocacy groups know what to do,
mm-hmm,
and in many cases lack the information on what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're trying to do is provide the information to these groups,
okay,
so that they can then take it to the next level at the policy level and broach those discussions within their countries.
And in how many countries do you have this project right now?
We're studying 65 countries this year.
Okay.
We studied 40 last year and 65 this year.
And is there any interesting outcomes that you can share with us or something? Do you...
Big story, of course, is that filtering is growing by the minute around the world. There's more and more countries are filtering the internet.
Okay.
And the scope of what they filter is growing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really kind of the big message. Within that, there's funny, quirky little stories here and there. Every country filters the internet in its own way and focuses on different topics that are particularly sensitive within a country.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of website by website, it's very hard to predict who's doing what out there.
Okay, so I mean, that means that you probably are trying to see the causes of the filtering as well, country by country?
We are trying to guess what the causes are, mm-hmm, but we don't know. We don't know. I mean, one of the facets that we've discussed is that, it's often done quietly and behind closed doors. It's done by engineers and policymakers, and it's rarely done in public consultation.
Mm.
So it's hard to know often the reasons
the causes,
why certain things.
But the researchers who are working, do they have any opinion why?
Sure. I mean, there's a few major reasons that are given for blocking the internet.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
The first one is to protect our children from harmful content on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
The other is national security interests.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is social norms and trying to prevent highly offensive materials from being out there.
Mm-hmm.
Preventing copyright infringement is another popular one.
Mm-hmm.
But what we see, of course, is that once you put in the infrastructure for filtering the internet, it's not only the technical infrastructure, but kind of the administrative and the political and the social infrastructure, yet it's very easy to add other things to the list.
Okay.
And, of course, in this realm, it's very hard, if not impossible, to draw a clean line as to what should be filtered and what shouldn't be filtered.
Mm-hmm.
Even when there's a strong rule of law that tries to define what's permitted and what's not permitted.
How do you see the interest from other communities, I mean, in terms of the outcomes of the research? Are they interested to know about the research outcomes?
I think probably the highest level of interest we're getting is probably from the human rights community,
mm-hmm,
which is very concerned about blocking access to human rights information around the world,
mm-hmm,
and also very active in promoting free speech around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a lot of interest from them. We get a fair amount of interest as well from companies who are interested in
developing
promoting. Actually, they don't talk to us. They'd probably rather we didn't exist. But companies that are very interested in doing business on the internet and free speech. Hence, I mean, it could be used as an anti-competitive practice. And a company that relies on access to its website, if it's blocked, that's eating into its business, and they could be very upset about it. And there are also governments that are interested to the extent that they're trying to promote greater openness around the world. So we get a little bit of interest from governments and private sector and from the NGOs as well.
I know that you already published a book, Access Denied. Can you talk a little bit about that, what that book tried to cover?
Sure. Access Denied is an attempt to kind of cover the landscape of internet filtering for the first time. So it includes the results of the 40 countries that we studied last year. But it also has, I believe, 6 chapters that try to discuss kind of the political motivations and implications of filtering, the social aspects, the technological aspects, which tools are being used to filter the internet, the impact on bloggers and NGOs, so kind of A to Z on internet filtering. Right. Well, we've added a large number of countries to the study this year, so our research is expanding, which is keeping us busy, as well as trying to better understand what the implications are of filtering around the world, which it's difficult to know.
Yes.
To try to understand what the true impact of limiting access to information is a very, very difficult question. And also how to make those balances between blocking that material on the internet that most of us would agree probably shouldn't be out there in the first place with protecting free speech is a very, very difficult problem. And we're trying to look and compare it how different countries around the world are trying to resolve that problem and how it might be done better.
Come back to my first question where I wanted to say, I mean, it's just a discussion of overall governance issues as well. And I mean, I think this particular study will give us a very good overview of what is the landscape right now in terms of filtering. So do you have any plan to develop any capacity for the people who are working on it, to the research, and B, also to probably doing activism around these issues?
I think that's something that we'd like to do. We don't have time to do everything, but I think one of the things that we'd like to do is get more into describing the cost and benefits of filtering as well as the alternatives. I think that a lot of politicians and governments really feel strongly compelled by public sentiment to filter the internet, which is very, very understandable. And I think the ultimate solution to this is to learn to live with greater freedom on the internet and find out how to mitigate the negative sides of an open internet in a more effective way, rather than the filtering, which we see it as a rather blunt instrument for carrying that out. But the alternatives are very complex.
Okay, great. Great, Robert. I mean, thanks for giving us some time. I know that you're quite busy and you have to run for another appointment. So thanks a lot for this. And it's great talking to you and to know about the OpenNet Initiative and the things that we're doing.
Thank you so much, Partha. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Okay.